The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
All right, everybody, prepare yourself for a collective jazz snap, because what you're about to hear is perfect for the nauseatingly pretentious applause of the progressive crowd. So here we go. It centers around an artwork, a piece of art, beautiful art, titled Flag Number 2. It's by a German artist. Smeared with black paint and the engraving of a striped sock. Now, according to the artist, this represents a new symbolic meaning in the light of recent imprisonment of the immigrant children at the border. Oh, my gosh. I've seen this art. It was hanging on a flagpole in the University of Kansas, I believe it was. It's beautiful. It looks like somebody just slapped some black paint on a flag, but that's not what it is. No. The German-born artist also reminds us, let's not forget that we all came from somewhere, and we're only recent occupants of this country, native cultures new to take care of this continent. Much better for thousands of years before us. Oh, did they? It's about time for our differences to unite us rather than to divide us. You know, I love being lectured by a German, because they're always so inclusive. When they talk to me about, you know, hey, let's make sure that we're not rounding people up, I listen to the Germans. Now, this is an art project sponsored by the Creative Time Project. The art project is part of a larger series called Pledges of Allegiance, in which each artist designs a flag that points to an issue the artist is passionate about, because they believe that issue is worth fighting for, and it speaks to how we might move forward, here's my favorite word, collectively. Oh, that is great. And you couldn't have found anything else to put it on except an American flag. That's an interesting choice. Now, most of the other flags have clouds or the blank canvas. I like that one. It's just white. It's called laziness. Oh, dear God. Slogans like horror film called Western Civilization and Don't Worry, Be Angry. It's all a beautiful, beautiful art project that you're probably paying for if you have kids in university. The flag is a collage of an American flag, one of my dripped paintings, and resembles the contours of the United States. I've seen it. No, it doesn't. I divided the shape of the country into two, for the flag represents and is designed to reflect a deeply polarized country in which a president has openly bragged about harassing women and is withdrawing from the Kyoto Protocol, as if those two things aren't as equally bad. As much as we may not like it or agree with it, this artist is protesting peacefully. Now, this is the thing. They absolutely have a right to express their anger and their opinions with their freedom of speech. We don't have to like it. We don't have to condone it. I don't even have to call it art. But we're shooting ourselves in the foot if we don't at least respect the right to freedom of speech. I'm just tired of paying for it. And I'm also tired of hearing from people who say, you can't. It's Cinco de Mayo. Oh, my goodness. We have to expel these kids who are wearing an American flag T-shirt. And then you could do whatever you want to the American flag and run it up the flagpole at a university. These are the same people who throw a tantrum anytime someone orders a chicken sandwich from Chick-fil-A. But in the end, let's just remember, we're the ones that actually get the chicken sandwiches. They don't get anything. One problem with the flag, and that is the display at a public university. I just want the left to imagine. Now, I know you don't, you're now starting to back away from the First Amendment, because the First Amendment is being used against you. No. The only reason why the First Amendment is being used, quote, against you is because the only speech that needs protecting is the speech that the majority doesn't like. Now, you're not the majority by any stretch of the imagination, but you are the majority in the universities, in the media, and in the government now. You have some ability to make us feel like we are in the minority. You're calling all the shots and writing all the rules. That's the only reason why the First Amendment now is coming into play. Because when you were going to court to defend your right to speak, you were defending a crucifix in urine. We're going to court to say, I don't have to say those things. I'm a doctor. I don't have to call this man a woman because he thinks he's a woman. That's not science. Boy, in the grand scheme of things, I think I'd rather be on the side of science than the cross in urine. I mean, don't get me wrong. It was beautiful art, and I hope you made a lot of money on that. It was great. Now, let me ask you this. You did that. What do you think the response would be if a conservative art collective stained a rainbow flag and called it an art project and raised it on a flagpole at a public university? Do you think you'd be okay with that? You see, it runs both ways. How about if a University of Texas raised a rebel flag and called it art? See, this is the key. If conservatives and libertarians want to be political on campus, apparently all you have to do is do it under the guise of art. Apparently, that's the way you get it done.
It's Thursday, July 12th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
You know, I think the win here is just to totally remain calm. The win here is the things that are going on are so ridiculous that all you have to do is just remain calm the whole time. For instance, I could be really upset at the whole idea that I've been called and smeared and really run through the mud as a conspiracy theorist because one of the conspiracies was that I debunked the FEMA camps. Okay, now you never read all of that. You just read conspiracy theorist Glenn Beck who talked about FEMA camps. Yes, I did. I debunked them. But they made that into a conspiracy for me because they said you were even talking about a conspiracy. And because you even brought it up, you gave it credibility. Now, I could be angry when I hear things from MSNBC like I'm going to play for you. But the winning play here is, again, just to remain calm and point it out. Because there was a conspiracy of FEMA camps. Oh, Barack Obama, and at first I think it was George Bush, is building these FEMA camps. And they've got all these bags where they're going to bury people. And it's really, okay, shut up. Not true. The other conspiracy that we were really clear on was the birther certificate. The birth certificate of Barack Obama. It's not true. B, if it was at that point, it wouldn't have meant anything. It wouldn't have done anything. You could have had proof positive and it would not have removed him from office. A lot like what the left is now saying about Donald Trump. What do you do to get this guy out of office? You could have had a KGB agent saying, yes, this was a fake birth certificate we put together. His name is actually Boris. And it wouldn't have made any difference at all. So, I'm a conspiracy theorist. I want you to listen to this from MSNBC.
Okay, It sounds insane. I just want to say it really does. Like the idea that he goes to Moscow in 87, is cultivated as a Russian intelligence asset and is this sort of like sleeper cell for decades sounds nuts. It sounds like the stuff of conspiracy theories. Why are you not insane?
So that's a great question, Chris. I get that all the time. So first of all, the piece acknowledges that that is probably not true, but it might be. And one of the reasons
It's probably not true, but it might be.
So wait a minute, hang on. What we're talking about here, and they went on for about, 14 minutes or so?
I think eight.
So they go on, and they're saying, look, this sounds nuts. Well, what's nuts? That Donald Trump has been a Soviet sleeper agent since the 1980s, just waiting to be activated. And then he said, well, the piece itself acknowledges that this probably isn't true. Okay.
You take seriously some of these low probability, high impact scenarios, you know, before the election.
Wait. So it's the press's duty to take on these low probability and high, what was it?
High impact
theories. Oh, okay. We should just write this down so we know.
It seems like the FEMA camps were low probability, but high impact potentially.
Very high impact.
Sort of everyone heard that Hillary Clinton had about an 80% chance of winning, and we all just treated it like that meant 100% and didn't think about what would that 20% alternative really mean. So that's part of what I'm doing with this, with aspects of this piece, like this trip to Moscow. You know, what would it mean if it really went that deep? Now, there's a lot of ways in which this.
I love this. So what would it mean? Well, with his trip to Moscow, I mean, we're just writing this. This was not the Atlantic. This was
New York Magazine.
New York Magazine. So I'm just writing this and saying, what would it mean, his trip to Russia, if he were a sleeper cell from the 1980s? Well, gee, I think that's a pretty short article. It would be really bad. It would mean really bad things.
Yeah. Well, and wasn't the theory with the Barack Obama birth certificate, the fact that
he was a sleeper cell,
yes, that the Russians had planned this all along.
Right. These are birthers.
Yeah.
This is birthers. Yes. And here is MSNBC doing it.
They're pushing it.
Right.
Scandal could be really bad and not go that deep. But I think you need to consider that for another reason, which is that everyone always says, well, this has been Trump's view forever. All this stuff he's saying about the Western allies splitting us apart from the West and how he's sort of pissing on them all the time and saying, well, you know, we should let them go their own way. That's just what he's always thought. It's not really what he's always thought. It's what he's thought since 1987. He never thought that before then, or at least he never said it before then. And in 1987 is when he went to Moscow, and he's feted by the Russians and tours Moscow, and then he comes back, then he starts talking about running for president for the first time, and then he starts talking for the first time about how our allies are a bunch of freeloaders and we should kick him to the curb.
Yeah, and we should say that
Can we stop for a second? Where was he in 1985? Where was he? Where was his height? Because his height was at the end of the Reagan administration, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when he bought his first casino, I think, in the late 80s.
Right. Okay. So he starts to go on record about the
people knew who he was then.
Right. And he was a big mogul by that time.
Yes. And that's around the time that Art of the Deal came out. Then people started listening to him. They were listening to him in 1975.
it's ridiculous. What were Glenn Beck's views in 1969? I don't know. I was four. Nobody was really listening to me then.
Isn't that the same time you visited Canada, though? And then have always been?
Oops, hang on. His mic was just unplugged or something. Let me tell you about our sponsor this half hour. It is LifeLock. Security professionals warning now of email phishing scams targeting World Cup fans. Now, I'm completely safe. This is just yet another reason America is number one. We don't have to worry about the World Cup thing. In fact, this thing has gone on so long now, I'm beginning to question the rest of the world. I really am. They're all, you know, you read day after day, oh, this country's depressed. Oh, England's depressed. Get over it. It's soccer. Nobody in, well, at least in the place that counts, cares about the soccer cup, whatever it is. Okay. Anyway, they're now fishing for anybody who is connected online with the World Cup. So if you're looking for information, et cetera, it can come on in and put a weak link into your system. Criminals can get in and start taking your passcodes, your banking codes. LifeLock identity theft protection is now added the power of Norton Security, which will help protect you against the threats to your devices that you can't easily see or fix on your own. And if you have a problem, the agents are going to be there to work to fix it. Nobody can stop all cyber threats, prevent all identity theft, or monitor all transactions at all businesses. But LifeLock with Norton Security is able to uncover the threats that you might otherwise miss. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use the promo code BACK. Get an extra 10% off your first year, promo code BACK with LifeLock.com. So the year that I was made Defender of Israel and given that award by Benjamin Netanyahu is the year that I was also called an anti-Semite for discussing the facts that George Soros manipulates world markets and is working to manipulate the governments of the world.
There was also the fact that he was made to go out with Nazis and show up at the home of Jews and invite them to leave their homes.
Right.
When he was a kid.
And I don't condemn him for that. He was a kid at the time.
And we only get that from him.
From him.
So,
from him. Right. So anyway, but that's a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
Okay. But Chris Hayes and New York Magazine with Jonathan Chait, which I believe has hate. Just drop one letter and you've got hate.
You can't
hate.
Spell Chait without hate.
You can't do it. So he writes a story in New York Magazine that says that Donald Trump is a sleeper spy for the former Soviet Union.
The KGB turned him in 1987 on his first trip to Russia.
Mm-hmm. Now, he says this is most likely not true. But he feels that, and so does Chris Hayes, that we have to look at these low probability, high impact theories and just to, you know, prepare because, you know, we all thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win and she didn't. So what happens if this is true? I'm going to spill the beans. I'm going to do it, Pat, as I'm tired of living this lie.
Oh, no.
I'm going to do it.
Oh, no. Now, if Stu were here, would he recommend you
he
not?
He would recommend that
he
I
would
don't.
Say, don't do
he
it. Would Let's talk it. About it off the air.
But
first.
I'm going to tell you know what I'm going to. I'm going to talk about NASA. I'm going to do it.
Don't.
Here's the deal.
Oh,
does
no.
anybody remember any interviews with Donald Trump before Apollo 11?
So 1969? No,
yes.
I don't.
You don't.
I don't remember
right?
any. No.
You don't remember any.
I don't.
Then suddenly, a few years after Apollo 11, he appears and he becomes this giant mogul. Now, this is probably not true. But
imagine the impact, though, if it is.
Okay. We're talking Donald Trump is a moon baby. And
so
Neil
you're
Armstrong,
saying Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin found him on the surface.
Yes.
And brought him back.
They brought him back. He is a plant from the dark side of the moon.
Well, then we don't even know where his loyalties lie.
No. Well, the dark side of the moon. You know what the dark side of the moon is?
I don't.
It's dark because when you look into a cannon, what's it look like?
It looks dark.
It looks dark.
Very dark.
The moon, the other side, is actually the opening of a giant space cannon.
Now, that's probably not true, but imagine if it were.
Okay. And the moon is actually the cannonball in the giant space cannon.
That's high impact.
And when the moon baby commands it, notice he's calling for a space force.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yeah.
When the moon baby commands it, the moon turns around and we're looking at the dark side of the moon, which is the inside of the cannon.
Cannon.
And they're going to fire the moon at us. Now, imagine a big impact. That's biggest impact. Am I right?
Huge. That's
we have a responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
to get this information to Chris Hayes because Chris Hayes will expose this because this is the biggest impact, low probability that I can imagine. Donald Trump is a moon baby.
This is really going to surprise you, but the media does a really terrible job at a lot of things. And one of the things they do a terrible job at is covering cryptocurrencies. They will just take, someone like Jamie Dimon from J.P. Morgan, who came out and called Bitcoin a fraud. And then they don't really cover the fact that J.P. Morgan wound up emerging as one of the most active buyers on behalf of their clients of a fund that tracks the Bitcoin price. George Soros did the same type of thing. You got to have the full picture. Experts are all over the map when it comes to cryptocurrencies. You need to know the facts. We're going to explore this in a live, free online broadcast that Glenn is going to personally host on July 19th. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com and register for the free special event. You're going to discover the new case for Bitcoin, three names of cryptocurrencies that Tika Tiwari recommends that you should buy now. It's a really important list. And exclusively, you'll get access to the $2 million Bitcoin giveaway. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com and register. It's BeckCryptoShow.com, BeckCryptoShow.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So I am still a little perplexed by the lack of coverage from the conservative side on what I think is a really important story. And I don't know why people aren't picking this up. Do you have any ideas, Pat, of the 3D printed gun freedom of speech case that Corey Wilson was suing the government because he said they shut him down, basically called him a terrorist for putting the
schematics
lack of a better term, the schematics of a gun to be 3D printed, and that you can't do that. Well, he won the case, and the government had to not only pay for his attorney fees, but they had to admit that they were wrong, that 3D printing, the schematics can be shared online up to a 50 caliber, no automatic weapons. And they also had to admit that the AR-15 is not a weapon of war. How is this not a big story?
I don't know. It doesn't even seem like Fox is necessarily.
I know nobody's on this. We have Cody Wilson joining us. In about half an hour from now. So don't miss that. Let's see. Do we want to go back to the MSNBC, or do you want to move to Steven Crowder?
The Crowder confrontation is pretty fun.
Okay, so Steven Crowder is a guy who's just fearless. And he has gone out. He was in Austin. And he was holding these, change my mind sessions out on the street where they'd be a big statement behind him. And I don't remember what the one was in Austin, but it was about transgenderism
I think it was how many genders are there?
Was that what
he was asking?
Yeah.
Yeah. And his thing was there were two.
Two. Right. And so he just does this thing, change my mind. And he invites people who are walking down the street to change his mind. Well, one of the people that was running for, I think, city council, who is a transgendered woman, sat down and spent 40 minutes with him. And they talked, and I watched it. It was a really interesting conversation. Well, while that was happening, there was somebody in Austin that tweeted, Steven Crowder is at this location. Somebody's got to go slash their tires or surround them and remind them, that they should be more prepared to come to our city.
And he gave him the exact location of where to go find him.
Right. Okay. So Crowder finds this and decides to print all the evidence. And before he goes to police, he decides to go to the guy who he knows where he's working and say, hey, dude, before I call the police, will you just take this down and apologize? Here's what happened.
Austin, Texas, a city of great coffee, great food, great conversation, and people who want to vandalize our property and see us die. Meet Day. He's just your local transgender juice barista who calls for acts of violence in his spare time. What kinds of acts? Like publicly posting our specific location with calls to visit us, slash our tires, and teach us lessons, ensuring that we'll never make ourselves vulnerable again. How do we know that he, she, Z meant business? Because he, she, Z said so while recruiting the same friends who helped him deface the Robert E. Lee statue at UT. Silly. That's a crime, too. Oh, well. Civility's great, but you plot violence, it's time to confront.
Hey, kid.
So he actually goes into the place of business.
Remember me?
No.
No? You don't remember me at all? Steven Crowder at all? No, not familiar?
No.
This is you threatening to slash my tires here?
Oh my God, you need
remember
to
this?
Out.
Slash
okay,
my...
Okay, stop. He first says no. No, I don't know. No, I don't know who you are. Well, he clearly does because Steven walks in with this giant poster board of his Twitter page or his Facebook page, and it's posted a picture of Steven Crowder. He knows who Steven Crowder is, obviously. Soon as he says, oh, really? You don't know who I am? Because this is the evidence that you do. The kid immediately then says, hey, dude, you just really need to chill out.
Tires and actually, funny enough, also the Robert E. Lee statue seems you helped defend.
We're trying to work.
Let me ask you, why do you think it's okay to threaten to slash someone's tires?
Hey, I didn't do it.
Predictable, Z. The first instinct is always denial.
But why did you do this, oh man?
Well,
you realize that you put our crew in danger.
Lucky for us, we had a Bristol board.
How about you check this out here? We'll leave this cop. Yeah, I'm a conservative who has a difference of opinion from you. And I've never threatened actions of violence. I've never threatened to slash anyone's tires.
Okay, stop for a second. Now, if you would be watching this, you will notice that now the barista's boss is now standing between him and Steven Crowder and defending him. Now, I just want you to remember what happened at Starbucks. At Starbucks. Now look at what is happening to this guy. A guy who has threatened someone else and has admitted on his Facebook page that he was also behind the vandalism of a statue in Austin. So you're working with a guy who has now admittedly done two crimes.
Call the police.
You know what, Les? Let's call the police. No, officers? Because matter of fact, we actually have it. No, actually, I would like to speak with the police. We're about to file a report very soon.
Okay, you should do that, man.
This is a part of being a man, is owning up to the actions here. When you threaten violence against someone. When you threaten violence against someone, part of being a man is taking ownership of your actions, taking responsibility.
And this is really pretty kind, I think, of Steven, because this person's fairly new as a man. And so this is a nice life lesson in how to, you know, solidify your identity. I think it's helpful.
Said you would come back when I was off work.
I will, but could you just? But I don't believe you're going to be here because you're a dishonest human being. You said you didn't even post this and acted like you didn't know me. I think you're a liar.
I think you need to go.
Well, let me ask you this: could you just say, "Hey, you're sorry"? Take this down. Could you take this down? Could you take it down? Because there are other. It's not going anywhere. Oh, there you go. He just admitted to doing it.
What? My name's on it. Of course, I did. It has nothing.
So you did do it. So you think it's okay to threaten someone and slash their tires?
I didn't do it.
So was it a joke?
Are your tires okay?
Thank you.
So does that make it? You know, it's a crime. It's a crime to threaten this. You understand that, right?
Okay, it's a crime.
Could you take
it
down? Could you take it down?
No, it's a crime.
Could you take it down and just say, hey, listen, I don't really want to call actions to violence to people who disagree.
I think it's time for you to go, dude.
Part of being, come on, you want to play the part. Part of being a man is owning up to the actions and admitting what you did. They call the police? Well, good. I think they should call the police. I think if they call the police, we should file a report.
I would like to, before filing a report, offer you the chance to take it down and just stop with the threats of violence. You stop with the threats,
stop.
You take it.
I think Steven Crowder is being really magnanimous here.
Yeah. Just take it down.
Just take it down and apologize and say, I don't want anything to do with violence.
Tells him it's not going anywhere. He's not going to. He has no intention of taking it down.
Why?
I don't know. The guy's serious about being violent to Steven
because
Crowder?
Because I believe...
He hates him so much?
He is not afraid of what happens when Steven Crowder leaves.
Yeah.
He is surrounded by people who think he's right and think that what he's done is okay to do on conservatives or to conservatives. Now, if he were a conservative... And some liberal walked in and outed him as a conservative, I would bet you that his boss would not protect him like that. He's not afraid of any consequence because there are no consequences when you are on the progressive or the postmodernist side. You can do whatever you want, and there are no consequences.
I already am, but everybody knows who this guy is, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I know. Just keep looking at me.
Oh my God, why do you think this person is being abused? This is a threat of violence.
I'm not going to.
You're not
going to
read it. First off, I would never threaten anyone here with violence. I hate violence, certainly for political opinions.
Well, we actually had a Change My Mind, which is a segment we do where we sit down. And we actually had Danielle here, who's running for city council, a transgender person, sit down for 40 minutes and talk. At that time, was threatening to slash our tires, and someone who works at UT was asking our car to be firebombed. The time for discussing is over. It's time to renounce the acts of violence coming from people who you employ.
So I can't speak to this. I'm on the clock. I can't speak to this right now, dude.
You can read, can't you? And
please,
I've listened to you.
Please step
can you
out.
Understand?
Here, look, I'll help you. I'll take your poster outside for you.
No, I'd like you to keep it here for when the police arrive. But I would love it for when the police arrive, because that's actually evidence. So I'd like to keep it.
Now he snaps the poster in half.
Where did you put
absolutely.
The board?
Absolutely. One of your friends nicely yanked it out of my hands, and he has it outside.
Gosh, so they got slightly Yankee.
Yeah, so a little Yankee. A little Yankee. A little Yankee.
A little Yankee.
Yeah, just like a little bit.
Great. Well, I hope we have it on camera.
All of you need to walk out with your GoPros and your pretty cameras.
Oh, that's right. I guess no right to film.
Okay, so this ends with the police coming. And the police don't go after Steven Crowder. They don't arrest the other kid either. However, Steven does fill out a complaint and they say that they are going to be looking into it. Now, we're going to follow this story because I'd like to see what looking into it means from the Austin Police Department. If you are threatening people with firebombing, if you are claiming that you are part of defacing public property, if you are inciting people to go to a specific location at a specific time and either firebomb or slash tires, does that matter? Does that matter?
It should. And it would if it was on the right.
Yeah.
But like you said, I don't know in this case. I don't think it will.
No.
He'll get no consequence from
and
this.
And anyone, remember that someone just wouldn't obey the Starbucks rules. The rules. You got to buy something, anything. You have to be a customer to use the bathroom and to stay here. They called police on that. And that was so offensive that the Starbucks chain shut down for a day. Here's this little juice bar that I'm sure nothing's going to happen because I'm sure it's local and it's in Austin and it's in the progressive little, you know, neo-Marxist neighborhood, and they're not going to do anything about it. In fact, they will wear this as a badge of honor and he will become a superstar. He'll become the barista at this juice bar and no lesson will be learned.
And we'll probably see him on Stephen Colbert. And he'll be a little celebrity for 15, 20 minutes. The little barista himself, I bet you Colbert will get him. And Jimmy Kimmel.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, it's not like somebody could bring a clock into class that looks kind of like a...
a bomb.
Oh, well, it's, yeah. He's just... and he becomes famous. Here's our sponsor this half hour. It's Casper. Casper wants to make sure that you have the best night's sleep. And the best way to do that is to test a mattress out. You know, if you have a new pair of shoes, I have a pair of shoes in my closet that I bought. I wore like two times. I wore them in the store and I like them. And then I wore them a couple of other times and they were so uncomfortable. I hated them. If that's ever happened to you, can you imagine what's happening with the mattress that you're sleeping on? You buy a mattress because you'll go into the store and you'll flop around on it for a few minutes. That doesn't tell you anything. And then what happens if you don't like it? You just live with it. Don't. Try a Casper mattress for 100 nights with their 100 Night Sleep Challenge. 100 nights. If you're not getting a great sleep, you know, by night 40... send it back. And they come and pick it up, and they refund every single penny without a question asked. It is Casper. Use the promo code Beck right now, and you're going to save, I can't remember how much it is, $50 on select mattresses. It's promo code Beck at Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply. Casper.com. Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. So I'm very curious as to why the media, even on the right, are not following a story about a massive free speech lawsuit that the government just lost to Cody Wilson and SAF. Now, what this is Cody Wilson was on our program, I don't know, 5 years ago. And you know him from this quote.
In whose conception, under what paradigm, you know? I'm just resisting. What am I resisting? I don't know. The collectivization of manufacture, the institutionalization of the human psyche. I'm not sure. But I can tell you one thing. What? This is a symbol of reversibility that can never eradicate the gun from the earth.
Right.
Okay. So. That is true. The symbol of irreversibility that can never eradicate the gun from the earth. That is what this was all about, this lawsuit. Do you have the right to put basic schematics up of a gun in 3D printed form so you can download it to a 3D printer and print and make your own guns? The court decided, yes, that is freedom of speech. So now he can continue to post these things. Also, they admitted that the AR-15 is a modern sporting rifle, and the government was forced to say that this is not a weapon of war. So, why isn't this being covered? And is this a good thing? I want you to hear from Cody Wilson himself. He's from Defense Distributed. He's coming up in just a second. He is a admitted
anarchist,
some ways. Free market anarchist. Mm-hmm. I don't think he believes in trademarks and copyrights, which I have a problem with. But he has made a great deal of coverage here, I think, for the Second Amendment. And you have to hear from him yourself. What does this mean for the future? Cody Wilson joins us in a second.
Glenn Beck. Thursday, July 12th.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Right, okay, get off my back. Cody Wilson is the founder and I believe CEO of Defense Distributed. This is a company that makes digital files that lets anyone print 3D untraceable guns. He is also in the business of making the actual printers, and I have purchased one of these guns. We have it in our collection for our museum because I think this is an important step. One of the very first 3D printed guns. If you ever handle it, you would have no idea that this is... I've handed it to people before who are gun people and said, tell me about this gun. What do you think about this gun? And they were, oh, it's great. Yeah, it's 3D printed. They can't believe it. But the world is changing. Now, he was sued. I'm sorry. He was stopped by the government. They called him all kinds of names. He sued and he won. The government came out with quite a statement this week. It's not getting a lot of press, and I don't know why. We have Cody on with us now. Hello, Cody. How are you?
Hey, Mr. Beck. Good morning.
So, Cody, you are an interesting dude. Let's start with a couple of definitions from you on how you describe yourself. You're a crypto anarchist. What can you define that? What does that mean?
That's just for the kids, man. But basically, you know, in the 80s. In the 80s, they came up with this idea that the internet would allow, if not outright political anarchy, at least a virtual form, mm-hmm. which would mean like we'd get things like Bitcoin and we'd get things like WikiLeaks and these liquid markets of information that no government or set of governments could really prevent,
right?
You know, the creation of such economies. I mean, the people demanded it, and the frictionless flows of information would allow them. I simply claimed back in the day that, you know, liquid information and guns would be a part of that. So it's kind of I keep getting called a radical these days, but, you know, when the Department of Justice comes out and says what you're doing is constitutional, or they come out and say Brett Kavanaugh is some type of extremist for following the letter of the law, you know, it's funny how, like, the shoes switch feet these days. I don't feel like much of a radical right now.
Yeah, I mean, I am having a difficult time backing the government on what they claimed. This was the Obama administration that went after you. Having a hard time with this. However, because of the world we're living in, there's no way that you're ever going to put the genie back in the bottle. 3D printed everything is just a part of our lives, or will be soon. However, there, you know, it is kind of a frightening thing that we should actually discuss, because anybody can print anything. And now, if you're afraid of everybody, that's a problem with society. Could you just real quick, free market anarchist? What is that?
I don't know. Basic principles of free market anarchy are that you think markets, not laws and other arbitrary systems, hierarchy should determine things. But look, man, I mean, would I vote? Maybe. But the important thing is, I'm glad that the political American tides that serve, like, our gun culture, for example, I'm glad they exist, right? I like being American. I like being a part of this unique history that put the popular ownership of firearms in people's hands. And I believe that I helped the Second Amendment, in fact, with my political philosophy. I supplemented it. And I don't believe that, like, we're opposed necessarily. I like the old radical Republican ideals of the founding of this country. I know we share that in common.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cody,
why isn't the press, because I see this as a huge victory for the Second Amendment. Why do you suppose no one is picking this story up? It's us and Wired magazine.
Yeah, that's true. Well, look, you had Kavanaugh. Trump determines the cycle. Mm-hmm. And the liberals right now, this week, were so worried about preserving Roe. And I mean, honestly, I don't blame them. And I even feel bad for them. I'm not hurt that this didn't get more press. If it did, I'd be having to, you know, watch my back or something.
I know. So,
and then why report on the fact that the Second Amendment is forever now? That doesn't help you out, does it?
Yeah, right. So tell me what the ruling means in what you believe. One of your attorneys was Alan Gura, who is, you know, behind the Heller case. He's one of the best Second Amendment attorneys, if not the best, in the country. Tell us what you think this means.
That's right. I would say we got the number one guy, the guy that really gave us the modern Second Amendment. I did not want to do this wrong. What this means is it's really more of a victory for the First Amendment. I know that's harder to translate for people. I know you guys will get that. This was the government ultimately on the merits question running away from a real stinker of a First Amendment case, where they would have to police or give themselves a plenary power to police all the information related to guns online. Well, we all know that that's absurd. So this was the government itself recognizing that it really shouldn't take on or even attempt to justify such a power. And I was frankly shocked to see it resolve this way.
Yeah, I was too. So Cody, what the ruling says is your freedom of speech to publish all of this, which is basically, if you will, you know, a computer blueprint for a 3D printer to print the gun. You can do that. However, what about me downloading it and printing a gun? That's not addressed, is it?
Well, it is. I've got good news for you, sir. But the technicalities, like the moving parts of this, this involved a bureau in the State Department and this set of laws called the ITAR. The upshot is a temporary modification to these laws has been created. And when I post these things and you come visit my site and post whatever you want, all that stuff gets committed to the commons, to the public domain, and then is thereby free for everyone in the country to use. And it's free for you to come to my site and contribute yourself. So by me winning, every American has the unquestionable right to traffic in this information. And we're not just talking 3D printing. 3D printing is a handle for it, but we're really talking about blueprints, CAD, CAM, for all the guns we know and love, everything. We're talking about the entire harvest, the entire computer-aided design and manufacture of popular firearms. It's now free and clear and open for the rest of time.
And I would not be in trouble, in your view, for printing a gun.
No, it's a separate question, really. But, you know, as long as you've been able to own a gun in this country, you've been able to make one without question. Now, some states want to regulate it if you get into the business, right, of selling these guns and distributing them. The federal government, that's when they step in. But what's great about this country is you've always been able to make guns here. We've built this country on building guns.
Huh. And so your company, Defense Distributed, you're the one who made my gun, the one that I bought from you 5 years ago or so. But now you're making the actual 3D printers that make those guns?
We found an opportunity to make a milling machine that helps machine some 80% lowers and unfinished guns, things like that. Just an available place in the market. Maybe you won't believe me, but I only started that so I could fund this lawsuit. Huh. I just didn't know it would take like 5 years to get it done.
Right.
But blessed are the naive, right? And, you know, we're too foolish to know that we can't win. And then you get lucky and you win.
So are you selling those printers?
Yeah, I am. I have a website called Ghost Gunner, ghostgunner.net. We sell mills for, $1,600, $1,700 bucks.
And will that make the gun that, do you remember the 1911 you sold to me?
Sure. I know what you're talking about. That's a laser centered 1911. No, that was quite a high tech application, but our mill does finish unfinished 1911 frames. So there's another way of making 1911s from what's called 80% frames. So that's another great thing about our industry now and what digital technologies have done for the gun owner. There's lots of ways, right? There's lots of roads back to Rome. and this definitely contains one of them.
So, Cody, here's one of the things that I think we disagree on. And I'd love to hear your opinion. I think what made America, what changed people and changed the world, was the patent or the copyright. It allowed the average person to dream and create and then change their status. I think that your view is that's all gone anyway, and it's going to be posted online and you'll be able to print whatever you wanted. Do you think that helps the progress of man, if you will?
I agree with your assessment that giving people monopolies helps them out. So if it's really like the post-war distortions of IP that are objectionable to me, you know, life of the author plus 70 years on these copyrights and things, you know, if we're going to have a set of intellectual property, let's make it truly useful for the commons. Let's give people truly limited monopolies in their lifetimes, less than their lifetimes, you know, so that people can begin to benefit from,
right,
from other people's work. I'm okay with having compromises on these positions, but my idealist position is that I think society on net would probably be better without strong patent and strong copyright laws. But irony of ironies, the way I won this lawsuit is that the State Department came in and gave me a monopoly to publish these files. So, you know, what are you going to do? I get that there's benefits. No question there are benefits.
Are you the only one now that can print these? Or, I mean, that can publish these?
It's funny. Like, yes, but I don't think they're going to penalize anyone else for doing it. And importantly, you know, because of my position, I'm not going to use that monopoly to be right. Anti-competitive. I'm just saying, hey, come to my website, share the stuff here. And then when I share it and put it up, anyone can use it again, you know? So it's kind of a trick. And I don't think most people even need to understand that. But it is ironic that a guy who says, hey, we shouldn't give IP protections to people, ends up winning with something like an IP protection.
That is ironic.
I want to. Can you hold for a minute, Cody? I want to come back and I want to talk to you.
Sure.
You were named Wired Magazine's 15 most dangerous people in the world. A lot has happened in your life since we spoke about 5 years ago. And I just kind of like to recap some of those and hear your point of view of, A, what is it like to be named one of the 15 most dangerous people in the world when we come back. All right, I want to talk to you a little bit about the Palm Beach Research cryptocurrency course that we've put together for our audience. Feedback's been really, really remarkable. Tika Tiwari was in the studios a few weeks ago, and we decided that we should do an in-depth show for anybody who's interested in cryptos and want to learn more. I'm not an expert on this by any stretch of the imagination, but I do own cryptocurrency. I wish I would have bought it a lot earlier. And I don't know how this whole thing is going to shake out, but I think that cryptocurrency is part of our future, a big part of our future. I'll be hosting a special Thursday, July 19th. It's at 8 p.m. It's absolutely free. You don't have to, you know, buy anything or, you know, have a subscription or anything. All you have to do is go to BeckCryptoShow.com, BeckCryptoShow.com. In this show, we're going to be sharing the names of three cryptocurrencies that Tika says you need to buy now. You have a chance to win $2 million in crypto. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com. Register now. Don't miss it. It's a week from tonight. BeckCryptoShow.com. We're talking to Cody Wilson, a fascinating, fascinating guy who has just changed the world. He's the founder of Defense Distributed, and in fact, AmmoLand just said this.
Cody Wilson had a goal. That goal is to make all gun control irrelevant. Starting on July 27th, 2018, his goal will come to fruition.
You believe that, Cody?
Oh, I think in the hearts of men, it's already irrelevant, but... So,
you seem more humble than when we spoke 5 years ago. What has life been like with you for the last 5 years?
Humbling could be an answer to that question, but there's when you get started, there's being real hungry, right? There's being real ready for it, and then there's the world to give you everything you want in terms of difficulty. So
yeah,
it's cool, man. And, yeah, I've been watching YouTube. You get out there for long enough, you just try to stay in the game. And
yeah,
there's a lot of room for being disheartened, and you need courage and you need strength. And it's nice. I feel like I've been tempered somewhat by the difficulty. Mm.
Yeah, I feel the same way. Cody, tell me, was it a humbling experience or was it cool to be named Wired Magazine's 15 most dangerous people in the world?
Oh man, you know, that happened when I was 24 years old. So what do you think I did with that? Like, what do you? Tinder? Yeah. No, sir. I walked in any room in any bar in the world and make yeah. use of that.
Yeah. Why did they say that about you? Was it just this, or I mean, you have with cryptocurrency? I can't figure out where you are really. Because you wanted to be on the board of Bitcoin to destroy Bitcoin.
Oh, no, sir. Well, I mean, the foundation, I didn't think that Bitcoin needed stewards or institutional representatives. You know, I felt like, why interface with the government? Why volunteer anything? They couldn't catch up. Why help? So I love Bitcoin. Oh, man. Bitcoin is, I started taking Bitcoin in 2012. To help with my project, and that was probably the single best decision I ever made.
Shut up.
I
sat with Mark Andreessen about that same time, and he said, Glenn, you should accept Bitcoin. And I was like, yeah, we should do that, and I never did. What a fool.
Was it even at 300 per coin back then, Cody?
No, did you buddy, get, you I got was a, getting them at 9 and 12.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh.
It was nice, okay? Now when it went up to 1,000, I cashed out quite a bit, maybe half at the time, and put up my manufacturing
dang.
Company. But it was still beautiful.
Yeah.
And to this day, I have quite a bit, so I'm.
So what
I'm
do you think?
In that sense.
What do you think the future is? Because Bitcoin became too hot. It just became a trend, a fashion trend, and people really didn't even understand it. I think. Where do you think it goes from here?
Well, this is, it's somewhat cyclical, like the public apprehension of it. So, yeah, it got really overheated to 20,000, but I think we'll see 20,000 again. And I honestly believe in the monetary economics of Bitcoin. You know, like you teach sound money. I believe that Bitcoin is perhaps the soundest money to have ever been created.
Yeah.
On its on its principle, on technical principle alone. But there's also a beautiful community of people developing around it, and all kinds of institutional tie-ins that are just almost in the offing. And look, I think it's here to stay, at least in concept. But even I believe that Bitcoin itself is the innovation. It's not the other technologies. It's that we really did create, by an order of magnitude, a more sound money than even hard currencies.
Where do you stand on things like AGI and ASI? Do you think we're going to get there?
You know what? I don't know if I know what you mean.
AI is artificial intelligence. AGI is artificial general intelligence. And ASI is super intelligence.
Got it. Okay. Well, in the computer science problem, I think a general AI is actually a fantasy. But I actually do believe that. I don't believe that AI is the kind of global threat that we hear about all the time from Elon.
Really? Why?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not a computer scientist, but with my background in philosophy of science and other things, I actually believe it's a more than a difficult problem to create a general intelligence. Intelligence is associated with all kinds of things that aren't just raw logics and logic gateways. And, you know, even with these neural networks and stuff, we're seeing interesting effects, but we're not seeing the creation of anything like consciousness, which, you know, requires understanding of mysteries that are beyond, you know, technical understanding.
So speaking of mysteries beyond understanding, we have played this clip from you probably 1,000 times since we've met. Here it is.
In whose conception, under what paradigm, you know, I'm just resisting. What am I resisting? I don't know. The collectivization of manufacture, the institutionalization of the human psyche. I'm not sure.
So we have a minute left.
So Cody, did you ever figure out what you're resisting, first of all? And then...
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Okay.
Good.
Often we do things right before we have the words for them. We know what we're doing.
Yes.
We can't say what they are.
Yes. Cody, I'm thrilled to talk to you and thrilled to see who you're turning into. You're wicked smart. You always have been. But you seem to have been tempered and have a very thoughtful outlook, which is needed at this time. And yet you are still swinging for the fences. And I think it's great. Cody, thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Beck.
You bet. Cody Wilson, founder of Defense.
It's a different kid than 5 years ago.
Big time.
Yeah.
I like him.
He's grown.
I like him. I liked him the last time. I like him this time. Back in a minute.
Remember that song, Our House in the Middle of the Street? It was like in the 80s. And I remember I was a kid when that came out. And I used to think that someone had a house like built in the middle of the street. And what a terrible idea that was, because a car could crash into it. There's all sorts of terrible things that could happen. If you have a bad real estate agent, who knows? You might get that house. That's how important it is. You don't want the real estate agent is going to be like, oh, that's a perfect house. There's nothing going on there. And then you find out they've built it in the middle of the street. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com can take care of more important and complicated issues than just that of my six-year-old mind. Real Estate Agents I Trust is a network of over 1,200 agents from all over America. They know how to advertise. They know how to get results. They know the local community, and they know how to make sure that you're updated. If you need to sell a house fast and for the most money, or if you're looking to buy, go to RealEstateAgentsITrust.com. You'll be introduced to the best agent in your town. Let these agents earn your business. There's great people. Get moving with realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com.
So let's talk about the all-important Papa John's controversy. Because, I mean, is pizza racist? We have to know. With the Papa John's thing, I'm trying to give Papa a reason for saying these things, and I cannot come up with a reason. Here's what happened. He's meeting with his PR firm, and they're going through a mock situation and trying to teach him how to avoid future controversies. Because you remember, Papa John's was in the news because they jettisoned the NFL, because they said, you know, they made it all about politics and not about football. They've really taken a hit. Some people say that their pizza is really, really crappy. You know, me living with an Italian, I wouldn't know, because she would kill me if I ever had a piece of Papa John's.
I love Papa John's.
Do you?
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, so here's what he said. He's in this meeting, and they're role-playing with him. And he says, well, Colonel Sanders called blacks the N-word, and he never faced any criticism for it.
Only he actually used the word.
Yeah. Okay, first of all, even if you don't use the word, probably not a good, example. Colonel Sanders has been dead for 30 years when he was saying that. You know, Martin Luther King was still saying, hey, what do you think? Can I belly up here at the lunch counter? No, not a good example. Then he went on and he said, you know, when I was growing up in Indiana, people dragged African-Americans from trucks until they died.
Yeah,
First of all, I don't know if that is true. And if it is, you're living in a different Indiana than I know of. In what context? In what context would that be appropriate?
If you're discussing the history of racism and why we are where we are, and you're trying to make the point of here's how bad it was, and so that's why it's so important that we fix that and don't use these words. Maybe.
Okay. Now remember, you're in a PR battle. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you've been with us when we've done PR prep, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
So what you do is you have PR people and they just fire relentless questions at you, trying to get you to crack or to say the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in what realm of reality would that be used in context in that setting that would be helpful?
I don't know, but it's to me, it's kind of a strange phenomenon that he's just explaining something and uses the word. He's not calling anybody that. He's not saying it's appropriate to use that. He just said the word. Is that enough for...
Would you use that word?
For them to lose $96 million in value in one day because you said that word? Is it really that...
Well, that goes to a different...
I wouldn't say
that
word, no.
Yeah, hang on just a second. That goes to a different... And I want to talk about that part, okay? Mm-hmm. However, you wouldn't use that word.
No.
I wouldn't use that word.
No.
Why wouldn't you?
It's just unacceptable today. Just right. Unacceptable for white people to use the word.
Right. I think it's unacceptable, honestly, for black people to use it.
Well,
but
they don't.
But they don't. And that's fine. Yeah. I can still say, I think you're wrong. It's unacceptable.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horrible word. I wouldn't use that word. I have an uncomfortable time using that word in a historic, for instance, reading Tom Sawyer. Or Huckleberry Finn.
Yeah.
Have a really hard time using that, but that isn't in a historic context. If you're just saying that and you're behind closed doors, doesn't that kind of tell you a little bit about who that person is? At least, not even saying that they're racist, just that they're completely disconnected from reality.
Maybe.
Okay.
Maybe.
Let me add this to it, because this answers your second question. We're not talking about you. We're talking about, well, I mean, in some ways, it would happen to you. We're talking about a guy who's running a major company.
Yeah.
That is having real issues. And if you are in that meeting and he's just spouting off like this, and you're like, oh, dear God, this guy just doesn't get it. You have a responsibility to shareholders. This guy is out of touch with what we need to do as a company, whether you agree with him or not. And I don't, because I can't figure out the context. Now, maybe he could explain that. But don't you have, I mean, he shouldn't be using that language just because he's the CEO of a giant corporation.
Yeah. And I think they've already distanced themselves from him leading up to this. And
he's done.
He's done.
No, he's done now. I think he's already
probably
resigned.
Done with commercials with Peyton Manning, and all of that stuff is probably going to go away now.
Yeah. I mean, it just shows his judgment.
Yeah.
If the guy's judgment is this bad, he shouldn't be running a company where else is his? I mean, under him, they have lost a lot of money.
Well, their shares are down 13% so far this year, while Domino's is up 48.5%. That tells you what's going on.
And Domino's, I got to tell you something. If I were on a desert island with my Italian wife, mm-hmm. and the only food was Papa John's or Domino's, mm-hmm. she couldn't make anything herself, mm. it would never be Domino's. Never be Domino's. I don't even know.
Tanya.
Yeah, I've never even had Papa John's that I know of. I don't think Tanya would ever do Papa John's, but I know for a fact.
Wouldn't be Domino's.
Wouldn't be Domino's.
Although, I've tasted it since they did the big change.
Really?
Yeah. They did one of the most successful, hey, we used to suck and we're better now campaigns I've ever seen. And I think it's really true. They are better than they used to be. I'm still not a huge
Domino's fan,
or a client very often. We always go Papa John's before Domino's, but it's better than it was.
If Papa John's is better pizza, what the hell are they doing?
Yeah,
what are they doing wrong? And that would go to the CEO.
It would, and all the negative publicity that's come to him.
Yeah,
this is
just not good. Just not good. There was another thing that I wanted to talk about, and that was The Rock. He was on last night on Colbert. Listen to this.
People have talked to you about whether you would run for political office yourself, because people love a winner. You seem like a winner. You exude great confidence. Mm-hmm. Do you actually take that possibility seriously?
I absolutely do. Yes. Yes, I do. Yes.
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 What's your model in that regard?
Well, by the way, just to put it in context, is something happened with the Washington Post. They had posted a story. They had written a story and said the gist of it was, if I were to run, I could have a legitimate shot at winning. It kind of picked up the steam. And when it picked up steam, a lot of people, the American public, kind of thought, yeah, actually, that's a great idea. So when that started picking up, of course, when I'm asked, yes, I have incredible respect for our American people and our country. So I said, yes, I would consider it. And of course I would. But at the same time, Stephen, look, I'm not delusional at all. Like, I feel like I, you know what it is? I need that thing. Experience. Yes. So if that were to happen, yes, in a 2024, 2028, I would have to go to work and get some experience.
Yeah, sure.
What does that mean? Every movie I have seen him in, I just look at my family right before I go, he's running. He's running. Look at the mm-hmm. roles he's playing. He's saving, you know, people from everything. He's becoming this action hero that is really funny and yet strangely relatable. Looking the way he does, he's still strangely kind of relatable. You like him. He's the perfect candidate. He's the perfect candidate. Well, you know, if we're looking for candidates that are just celebrities without any experience.
That leads me to believe, and I've heard it before, that he's Republican. Because he didn't mention 2020, which means he's not considering running against Trump.
Well, he said 2028, too. He said, yeah, I have to have experience. I have to get a job and have experience.
So, but it's interesting. 2020 was not even... To me, that leads me to believe maybe he's a little more conservative than Hollywood would like. And a lot of those people that are cheering in Colbert's audience wouldn't be cheering if they hear his policies.
Well, let's keep that to ourselves if
that's true.
You know what I mean? Because they will just destroy him. The minute he starts talking policies,
it's over for him in Hollywood.
I think that's why Colbert, did you notice the question he didn't answer? Who's your role model?
Yeah.
So would it be Schwarzenegger? Would it be Ronald Reagan?
Hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully.
Hopefully.
But that's what he asked. Who's your role model? Well, there's only been two that have made that jump, Stephen.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't it be interesting if Trump wins re-election and then Dwayne Johnson wins in 2024, that just creates a trend
you'll never break it.
Then Tom Hanks in 2028,
Tom Hanks 2024,
yeah,
The Rock, or Tom Hanks.
Right.
I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy. And you know who predicted this? Stephen King.
Really?
Yeah. Look in his book, The Running Man. In the book, The Running Man, they are dispensing justice on television. It's a game.
Right.
And everything's been gamified. And the president was one of the game show hosts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's a former game show host. And it's now it's just all about celebrity. By the way, speaking of this, did you see that? Is it Kim Kardashian? I think it was Kim Kardashian is on the road to being the youngest ever.
That's Kylie Jenner.
Kylie Jenner. The youngest ever billionaire.
Yeah.
She has made $900 million and she's 20.
That's amazing. Where does most of that come from? I didn't read the article. I just saw the headline. Is it from... Does she have like a clothing line? Where is that coming from?
Yeah, she makes cosmetics, makeup, right? Yeah, she makes cosmetics.
Wow.
Well, she doesn't make them. I'm sure she probably doesn't even wear them. But she sells it.
She's 20.
$900 million. Remember when $1 billion used to mean something? Let me tell you about Goldline. Goldline has introduced a brand new product created by the Royal Canadian Mint. It is the four nines, 99.9999 pure silver. And it's called the Maple Flex Bar. And it's comprised of 19 individual bars that make up 2 ounces of silver. Now, what this is it makes this easy for you in case things ever really go to hell in a handbasket. It makes it easy for you to break off smaller bullion coins and keep the bar whole when you don't need it as an investment bar. So it's perfect for barter situations in a crisis. Now, it has 10 1/20th of an ounce bars. It has 5 1/10th ounce bars, 4 quarter ounce bars. Each bar is legal tender. It's guaranteed for its weight and purity by the Canadian Mint. And the Royal Canadian Mint is stamped on it. I mean, look, they basically, when you break them apart, it looks like they're coins. But they're pure silver. So if things ever go crazy, you have 19 legal tender coins of silver. Maple Flex. It can be included in your precious metals IRA due to the fineness. It also comes with all of the features and benefits offered by Goldline. Free shipping, same price on credit card, check, or bank wire. Also, qualifying orders can take advantage of the Goldline Price Shield Protection Program that nobody else offers. So call them today. Want to own gold or silver? If things really get nasty, the Maple Flex is a great solution. Call 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Read their important risk information. Make sure gold or silver is right for you. 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com. After the broadcast today, we're getting a lot of questions in on cryptocurrencies, and I'm going to be talking a little bit about that today, right after the show on Facebook Live. Join me right after this radio show, so about an hour and 5 minutes, if you are on real time with us, you can join us there. I'm going to answer some of the questions from the audience and give you some information that I think you're going to want to have. If you're interested in cryptocurrencies, that is happening today, right after hour three on Facebook Live. Also today on my television show at 5, we're just taking open questions and open lines on the show. So it's just me and you on the telephone. And you can call in advance. Is this the radio number is the number that you would call? Yeah, so it would be 888-727-BEZK. That is going to happen at 5 p.m. Eastern live. And I'm not sure if it's also on Facebook, but I know it's on the Blaze TV. But if I think you might want to check Facebook Live. We might also take some Facebook questions today and do it there, but I'd love to talk to you at 888-727-BECK. You should probably call about 15 minutes early just to be able to get in because we're going to start taking phone calls right at the top of the program, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Glenn Beck program on the Blaze TV.
By the way, we're talking about Papa John's founder, John Schnatter, who, while trying to prevent some sort of PR snafu, created a massive PR snafu.
Right.
He did resign as chairman. So
that's what I thought.
It's been done already.
Bye-bye. I mean, what were you thinking?
I probably wasn't.
Yeah. And does nobody in the room have a confidentiality agreement? I mean, think of that.
Yeah.
Here's they're mm-hmm. brainstorming on how to not be, you know, you're in a session trying to see how to handle the press and you screw up and somebody leaves the room and calls the press and says, boy, this is really bad.
That's where we are right now.
Well,
it's just where we are.
Glenn Beck.
Okay. I just want you to just take a guess, just a guess, wild guess. I'm not going to hold you to it, but take a guess on what NARAL, the Pro-Choice America group, would think about the potential Supreme Court justice of Brett Kavanaugh. Show of hands. How many think their view is going to be positive? Right? Nobody. Thanks to Twitter, we can know this instantly. Let me give you this one. We'll be damned if we're going to let five men, including some frat boy named Brett, strip us of our hardworking bodily autonomy and reproductive rights. Just so you know, damned and men are both in all caps. For one, Roe versus Wade was also decided by damned men. I just want to throw that out. Frat boy named Brett? He doesn't strike me as a frat boy. Maybe this is just trolling 101. Don't feed the trolls. Just mentioning this story runs the risk of giving them an exposure, but the hypocrisy is just, it's fun. It's just fun. Great argument against Kavanaugh, it really is. And I'm not sure if they're going to use that, during the upcoming confirmation. Here's another one, too, that they might want to consider using. This one comes from late night comedian Stephen Colbert. As you would expect, he had this to say.
Now, I don't know much about Kavanaugh, but I'm skeptical because his name is Brett. That sounds less like a Supreme Court justice and more like a waiter at Ruby Tuesdays. Hey, everybody, I'm Brett. I'll be your Supreme Court justice tonight. Before you sit down, let me just clear away these rights for you.
That's funny. So let's end with another piece of comedy gold here. A reference to a name that is, actually ridiculous.
Colbert, that's a French name, is it not?
It's a French name just to get the cultural elites on my side, mm-hmm. Bill. I'm okay. As Irish as you. I'm a Tormey, I'm an O'Neill, I'm a Tuck, I'm a Fee, I'm a Connolly.
Because
I could sit toe-to-toe at a potato table with anybody.
I talked to your third-grade teacher, Miss Crabtree. Mm-hmm. She said back then you were Little Steve Colbert in South Carolina.
I was Steve Colbert.
But you, once you got here to Manhattan from mm-hmm. South Carolina, changed from Little Steve Colbert to Stephen Colbert.
I just wanted to point that out, Steve. Other people can make fun of names, too.
It's Thursday, July 12th. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
We should start calling him Mr. Colbert.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the program. I don't know what happened to Piers Morgan, but Piers Morgan came to America and tried to lecture us on how bad we are, then went back to Great Britain and is now lecturing them on all of the good things, including, you ready for this one? Donald Trump. Listen to this from Piers Morgan in England.
Obama deporting 3 million people, unconstable. You
yes.
spit up many families.
Yes, I did. And that's why.
Where
I also,
was your protest march against
why,
that when he came to
and
the
that's
country?
Why I also
if you feel so strongly about
that's why
it,
I also protest
where was your protest march against Obama?
In this country
if you found
as
that
well.
Unconstable too, where
was
the march?
You do not have to go out and march against
standards.
Everything in order to make a point about one thing.
No, if you find them both unconstable and it's the same issue, you have to march twice, don't you?
I would actually encourage you to maybe check out some of the other work that I've done where I've been intense.
Tell you what I do, Ash. I go and check out some basic facts about your hero, Obama.
He's not my hero. I'm
how
a
heroic
communist,
he comes
you idiot.
You didn't plan any protests against him.
So is Obama, by the way, you idiot. They were both communists, I guess. She, the guest and the president, at least a Marxist.
Well,
amazing.
Well, that's, you have more evidence than anything that MSNBC is saying about Donald Trump now.
That's for sure.
Of being a sleeper cell for.
Well, just his parents, his mentor, his college professors, just everybody around
his
him.
His friends.
Jeremiah Wright. Jeremiah Wright. His friends. He appointed communists in his administration.
So it was no big deal.
He believes in redistribution of wealth. No big deal.
Right. It's
it
not.
Doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, there's no evidence of any of that. But
I think it's fascinating, though. Every single person I can think of who's been on The Apprentice defends Donald Trump to
Penn Jillette.
So Penn's not a believer.
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, so there's one.
Yeah.
There's one. But Piers Morgan was on The Apprentice, and he is a staunch defender of Trump. It's amazing. He wants to have this guest, whose name is Sklar, I think, go do some basic homework on her hero, Obama. Didn't we believe Obama was Piers Morgan's hero during the whole Obama administration?
Yeah. And what he's saying is incredible. What he's saying is you have to be consistent.
Yeah, that,
if you cared about this and you think this is an abomination, where were you then?
Right.
And he's right.
Exactly right. Especially in Great Britain. You're protesting in Great Britain what's happening on our border when you don't know a thing about it.
Well, she's a communist.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, she is an admitted communist. And what do communists need anything they can have to stop the United States of America. You've got to stop the engine of America.
And that didn't apply to Obama because he was like-minded.
Hmm?
They didn't have to stop him.
He was what?
Like-minded.
But was he a moon baby?
No, he was not.
Yeah. We found out earlier on this program, and I think it is important for you to let MSNBC know. And Chris Hayes. He had a guest on from the New Yorker magazine who made it very clear that this isn't probably true, but we should check into the fact that Donald Trump might be a sleeper agent for the former Soviet Union.
Okay. It sounds insane. I just want to say it really
does. Chris Hayes.
The idea that he goes to Moscow in 87, is cultivated as a Russian intelligence asset and is this sort of like sleeper sell for decades sounds nuts. It sounds like the stuff of conspiracy theories. Why are you not insane?
So that's a great question, Chris. I get that all the time. So first of all, the piece acknowledges that that is probably not true, but it might be.
Hmm.
And one of the reasons I wrote this is you need to take seriously some of these low probability, high impact scenarios. You know, before the election, sort of everyone heard that Hillary Clinton had about an 80% chance of winning. And we all just treated.
So he's saying that it's probably not true, but it might be. So we exposed today that, and I think you need to let Chris Hayes know this, just, you know, tweet MSNBC, Chris Hayes, and let him know that, you know, we believe low probability, but high impact, that Donald Trump is a moon baby and that he was brought back on Apollo 11. Mm-hmm. I mean, can you prove that it didn't happen?
No.
Yeah. You never saw anything in the news about Donald Trump before.
Not before 1969. No way.
And then all of a sudden, 10, 15 years later, he's Donald Trump and everybody knows his name.
They brought him back from the moon.
They brought him back from the moon. He's a moon baby. Mm-hmm. Why do you think he's asking for the space patrol and the space force? Because he needs to get back to the moon. Now, again, that's probably not true.
But it might be. And if it is, it's really high impact.
Yeah.
Really high
impact.
Very
high impact. Very high impact. They have no credibility at all. Have you seen that Stormy Daniels she was arrested, what was it, last night?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently there was some touching going on at her striptease in
was
Columbus,
it touching
Ohio.
Or was it slapping?
I think she was slapping people around with her snoobage.
Yeah, it was boob slapping. And you weren't slapping her, she was slapping your face with hers. And it's classy. I mean, you know, West Hollywood. I mean, you did the right thing by giving her the key to the city. You know, I don't think that you have every right to say, you know, Donald Trump is just such a just such a disgrace to for men and and how he treats women, and then give the key to the city of the woman who is slapping men with her breasts. No, I think that's fine.
Do you find that inconsistent?
A little bit.
What?
A little bit.
Huh?
That's... A little bit. But she may also be a plant, a sleeper cell.
I mean, is it likely? No.
Right.
But think of the high impact involved.
And there's a lot of impact there, and she was showing it last night. Now
she could have killed somebody with those things.
I think she was actually born in the caves of the Grand Tetons. And she is from the Jackson Hole area. And she's now here, and she's going to slap people silly until they appoint her the queen of the Grand Tetons. Again, probably not true. Probably not true.
Worth exploring, though, because of its high impact possibility.
Well, there's something else on MSNBC that is worth exploring, and that's from Katie Tour. And Katie Tour had an interesting look at the Constitution, and I want you to hear it.
Do you think it's appropriate to continue to take such a strict originalist view of the Constitution, given it's 2018 and not 1776?
Well, I don't know that Americans have become more progressive on everything. Certainly, times have changed since 1776.
Stop.
But
stop,
how do you interpret?
Stop.
Given the fact that the Constitution hadn't even been written yet in 1776, that was kind of important.
That's weird, isn't it?
Wouldn't be written for another 13 years.
Yeah. So help me out, Pat. Yeah. The freedom of speech, is it any different than it was back then?
Freedom of speech today?
Yeah.
Different than it was then?
Yeah.
A little bit different.
How?
It was probably more radical then than it is now.
Yeah, that is absolutely true.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's changed since 1789 that besides the technology?
Forms of communication have changed?
The what?
The form of communication. We have different ways
it's
to be able
made
to...
it easier for people to speak,
right.
Which makes it easier for people in power to say, shut up, don't speak, which would actually take the First Amendment and make it more important than it was maybe in even 1789.
No doubt about it.
You know, I think we could do this all the way. And by the way, if you want to change the Constitution, change it. Change it.
Yeah, there's mechanisms to do that.
Yeah.
Set up within the Constitution itself.
No, shut up.
Pretty amazing.
How can that happen?
Pretty amazing.
What?
Well, you could do a convention for one thing.
You could do a constitutional convention.
You could do a convention.
We're actually for that.
Yes, we are.
Yeah. Yeah. There's another thing, too, where you just vote on an amendment.
Yes.
You could do that.
Uh-huh.
And that changes. In fact, we've done that a lot.
So, well, we started with 10 amendments. There's now 27.
Yeah.
So, yes.
Mm-hmm. So we've done it 26 times. You can do that. This just shows that they are only interested in legislating from the bench. That's all they want to do.
Yeah.
And here's proof positive. We're going to take a break. I want to show you. We went back into the archives and we looked for the questions and what they said about Robert Bork. He was right. The most extreme ever. Correct?
Yes. He was going to cause all kinds of disasters in this country.
Wait until you hear this. Then I think everyone will agree that Ginsburg is the most, let's just call her what she would claim, progressive on the bench, meaning that she wants to move things forward. We know that she doesn't use the American Constitution. She looks to South Africa and Canada to inform her decisions. Okay, that's not constitutional. But she rules from the bench, and everyone knows she doesn't side with conservatives. Let me show you the difference on how they both were approached by the press in the time machine here in just a second. Amazing. And please, do not spread it around, because it's probably not true, but it might be. And if Donald Trump turns out to be a moon baby, imagine the impact. Imagine the impact. Whew. Let me tell you about Simply Safe. Simply Safe obsesses over the details. The example that I've been giving you this week is the typical glass break sensor. I didn't know this, but it only makes sense. How do you know that? How does the sensor know that you just haven't dropped a plate or a glass? Because it sounds the same, doesn't it? Well, that's the problem with most of the sensors. It sounds even a baby cry can trip most of these things off. Simply Safe didn't like that, didn't want that. So they built a glass break test facility, and they ran over 10,000 live glass break simulations. That refined it. So when it heard a glass break, it knew, oh, that's a glass in the sink or a glass on the floor or a plate, and that's a window pane being broken. That's the kind of level of security and detail that they go to. SimplySafeBeck.com. Go there now. You will own the system. And the 24/7 monitoring is $15 a month. Save 10% on your home security system now if you go to SimplySafeBeck.com. That's SimplySafeBeck.com. All right, welcome to the program. All right, I want to start with Bork. Now, Robert Bork is a guy I remember. You know, this is 1988, and so I'm 24 years old, and I remember I'm driving across country because I'm going to my job in Phoenix, Arizona, and I'm driving from Ohio to Phoenix, and the Bork hearings are on, and I listen to it all week as I'm driving, and I just remember thinking, this is incredible. Listen to how Ted Kennedy talked about Bork before the hearing even started. See if it sounds familiar.
Robert Bork's America is a land in which women would be forced into back alley abortions. Blacks would sit at segregated lunch counters. Rogue police could break down citizens' doors in midnight raids. And school children could not be taught about evolution. Writers and artists would be censured at the whim of government. And the doors of the federal courts would be shut on the fingers of millions of citizens for whom the judiciary is and is often the only protector of the individual rights that are the heart of our democracy. America is a better and freer nation than Robert Bork thinks. Yet in the current delicate balance of the Supreme Court, his rigid ideology will tip the scales of justice against the kind of country America is and ought to be. The damage that President Reagan will do through this nomination, if it is not rejected by the Senate, could live on far beyond the end of his presidential term. President Reagan is still our president, but he should not be able to reach out from the muck of Iran Gate, reach into the muck of Watergate, and impose his reactionary vision of the Constitution on the Supreme Court and on the next generation of Americans.
All right.
No justice would be better than this injustice.
Okay. All right. So wow. It's an injustice. Have we heard all of that again? They use the same speech every time. Now, they have upped the ante a little bit. Now, you know, millions of people are going to die. It's not just that he's going to reach beyond the term. Millions are going to die. And I'll give you the evidence of that here in just a second. When Bork is being questioned, he's being questioned by a great senator now from the South. And listen to him. Not enough time? You have to listen to how he's questioned. And then we'll compare and contrast probably the most radical judicial appointment maybe of all time. Ginsburg. I didn't remember the Ginsburg trial. Do you remember that? Her hearings?
No.
Yeah.
Not really.
Now, how
not
is
really.
That possible?
First of all, the Republicans didn't make a big deal out of her.
Yes. There was no... Wait until you hear how Ginsburg was handled. There's an issue. There's a real issue here between the two.
It doesn't get any more left-wing radical than Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
No, she's the hero.
Doesn't even believe in using the U.S. Constitution as a basis for her judgments.
Correct.
That's grounds for impeachment right there. of a Supreme
well,
Court
not
justice.
If you're not if you're a progressive because you want the court, just the reason why the FDR mm-hmm. wanted the court. He wanted the court packed with a bunch of people who had his opinion that would allow the government to do whatever it is it had to do to right the wrongs of the past, which is not what the government is supposed to do. The government was established to protect the rights of all. That's what it's about. And that's what the Constitution and the Bill of Rights actually protects. And those guardians, those nine men and women, are supposed to stand as sentinels at those gates and not let anything harm those rights for anybody. I'll show you what they did with Ginsburg. We'll get a little bit more of Bork, and then I'll show you what they're doing now with Kavanaugh when we come back.
So I invest in cryptocurrencies a little bit. You know, I think it's a really interesting market. Why not put a little bit of money in it? And maybe it's going to turn up by 1,000%, 2,000%. We've seen those gains in the past. But I mean, there's so many complicated parts of this. There's a bunch of cryptocurrencies I wouldn't even know how to invest in if I tried. That's why I'm going to make sure I'm there watching on July 19th. Glenn Beck hosting a free online investment training broadcast special. It's going to be very valuable, I think, because it's going to tell you about the new case for cryptocurrencies and Bitcoin, the three cryptocurrencies that Tika Tiwari, our cryptocurrency expert, thinks you should buy right now. And you can have the chance to take part in the Palm Beach Letters exclusive $2 million Bitcoin giveaway. Go to BeckCryptoShow.com right now. Register for this free special event. I mean, you got nothing to lose. Check it out. Learn something. Learn about free investment advice. Learn about the case for these cryptocurrencies. It's BeckCryptoShow.com. BeckCryptoShow.com. BeckCryptoShow.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
In about a half hour from now, right after the radio show, I'm going to be doing a live Facebook post. You don't want to miss it, especially if you're interested in cryptocurrency, you're interested in what's to come. Just a real quick touch base with you on Facebook. Facebook Live, about a half an hour from now. Also, tonight at 5 o'clock on the TV show, which I'm not sure. I think it's going to be on Facebook tonight, but if you are a subscriber to The Blaze, you can get it at theblaze.com/TV. I'm doing a half hour of just phone calls, so get your voice in and heard. I'd love to hear your opinion and all of your questions, 888-727-BECK. That happens at 5 p.m. Eastern, and I would recommend that you call probably 15 minutes early, as we will begin to screen calls a little bit early. 888-727-BECK. We'll be taking your calls and your comments on Facebook today, a rare opportunity to get in. At 888-727-BECK, The Blaze TV. All right. So we just played Robert Bork. And Robert Bork was made into a monster, who was going to resegregate. We were going to have lunch counters and, you know, women would be dying. And it's horrible, horrible. Robert Bork's America. Now let me show you how Ginsburg was treated. Listen to this.
Clara.
Well, Clara, you deserve an award so far today.
Sure does. And you know people think I'm very serious, sober as a judge. And so when I had all you people taking photographs of me in the White House, people were trying to get me to smile. They said, think of Clara. And you can see.
Clara.
Look at Clara smiling.
Okay.
And then my grandson, Paul Sfera. And I must tell you that in preparation for these hearings, I have read briefing books, opinion books, law reviews, but there is no book in the world that means as much to me as this one. This is Paul's book. It says,
oh my gosh,
my grandma
look at that.
Is a very, very special by Paul Sfera.
Oh.
And I thank you, Paul, for this
isn't
wonderful
that
book.
Adorable.
Oh, she's opening it up.
Isn't that cute?
Look at that. She's showing the
look at there's some pictures inside.
It's precious.
Oh, that's
Paul,
so cute.
The handwriting is good. The pictures are beautiful, and you don't need a publisher. This is a...
It ends with a map of the USA.
Wow.
Senator Kennedy just said he hopes your teacher is listening to this.
That is great.
And Joe's just enjoying that hearing. Joe Biden just he was having a good time.
So now you have to ask yourself, how, have you ever heard anybody's confirmation hearing? I mean, especially if they are content. I mean, Ruth Bader Ginsburg is the most liberal, unconstitutional justice we have ever had.
And keep this in mind. At the time, everybody knew how liberal she was. Everybody knew how progressive she was. She was the director of the ACLU's Women's Rights Project.
Okay, so how did this very extreme woman get this treatment? Where were the Republicans?
Well, one of them was recommending to Bill Clinton that he not consider Bruce Babbitt for U.S. Supreme Court justice.
Really?
Yeah, Bruce Babbitt, too extreme.
Too extreme.
He thought, hey, what about Stephen Breyer? Or Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who's a great jurist and wild liberal, very honest and very clear thinking.
Now, who was this Republican?
It was a senator named Orrin Hatch.
Oh no, Orrin Hatch.
Orrin Hatch. Orrin Hatch. Yes, that's right. Thank you.
Little known senator,
head of the Judiciary Committee back then,
right?
And Republican. And
he's the guy who suggested
Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
It will not be a problem to get her through.
Amazing. And it wasn't.
It wasn't.
They confirmed her 96-3. 96-3. Think of that. If Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, you know it's going to be, 53-47-ish. Maybe 52-48, maybe 50-50, and
Pence
has to decide. I don't know. Can he even receive confirmation? I don't know. At this point, who knows?
But he's an extremist, which...
Oh, millions of women could die, we were told.
No, no, no.
Millions of women.
No, no. Can I mean, don't just say that. Don't just say that and throw that out there. Let me show you what has come from Yale.
Okay.
Okay. Now he's a Yale, former Yale guy. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the school was okay with him, right?
We write today as Yale law students, alumni, and educators. Ashamed of our alma mater. Jeez. Within an hour of Donald Trump's announcement that he would nominate Brett Kavanaugh, YLS 90, to the Supreme Court, the law school published a press release boasting of the alumnus' accomplishment. Is there anything more important to Yale Law School than its proximity to power and prestige? Judge Kavanaugh's nomination presents an emergency for democratic life, for our safety, for our freedom, and for the future of our country.
Good gosh.
His nomination is not an interesting intellectual exercise to be debated among classmates or scholars in seminar. Support for Judge Kavanaugh is not apolitical. Since his campaign launch, Trump has repeatedly promised to appoint justices that would overturn Roe versus Wade. Overturning that decision would endanger the lives of countless people who need or may need abortions, including many who signed this letter. The judge employed similar spurious reasoning in 2015 dissents against arguing that the ACA's contraceptive mandate violated the rights of religious organizations, even though those organizations were granted an accommodation that allowed them to opt out of providing contraceptive coverage. Judge Kavanaugh would also rubber stamp for President Trump's fraud and abuse. As part of his assault on the administrative state, based not in law, as he claims, but on policy preference, Judge Kavanaugh has undermined attempts to protect the environment and regulate predatory lenders and for-profit colleges. Judge Kavanaugh has consistently protected the interests of powerful institutions and disregarded the rights of the vulnerable. Now is the time for moral courage, for which Yale Law School comes at so little cost. Perhaps you as an institution and as individuals will benefit less from Judge Kavanaugh's ascendant power if you withhold your support. Perhaps Judge Kavanaugh will be less likely to hire your favorite students. But people will die if he is confirmed. We hope you agree your sacrifice would be worth it. Please use your authority and platform to expose the stakes of this moment and the threat that Judge Kavanaugh poses.
Well, I don't think the Yale students went far enough. Terry McAuliffe, the governor, former governor of Virginia, said Kavanaugh will threaten the lives of millions of Americans for decades.
Well,
so of course people are going to die. Millions of people are going to die.
That's because he has one of the gemstones. He has one of the power stones.
Yeah, we're not sure which one, though, right? That hasn't been confirmed.
Yeah, I think he has the time stone.
I thought it was the soul stone, but...
No, I think it's the time stone, because he's going to turn back time. You know, people will be sitting at lunch counters that are
segregated. Right. In fact, I think we go further back. I think we go back to slavery. I think he brings back slavery.
Well, if he has the time stone... Now, I don't know if he has the Martinizing stone, which...
Is that the one where your clothes get done in 1 hour?
Yes, it is, but you can use it any way you want. You can use it
really?
Any way you want. Yes.
So wow.
You can, it's been used benevolently.
Thank goodness. Up until now.
Up until now. It's an hour and your clothes are dry clean.
Okay.
But in the hands of the wrong steward, like Kavanaugh.
Could Martinizing take even longer than an hour?
Oh, it could take 90 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, it could take up to three hours.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And but what do you same think? Day still, though, right? You still
well, I don't know. Day. I don't know. But you're going to also, it's the abortion stone, because you'll have all those hangers that should have clothes on them.
Right. Oh, my gosh.
But they won't.
But they won't.
They won't.
Because that's not what you're using them for.
Exactly right.
Oh, boy.
So all of your clothes.
Millions are going to die.
All of your clothes will not be ready in an hour. Okay.
Mm, okay.
They won't come on a hanger because they're going to be using the hangers for other things. Okay.
What if we have a 3-day waiting period on purchasing hangers? Would that save lives?
Well, I don't know if it would save millions, but if we could just save one.
It's worth it.
It's worth it.
Ask yourself.
Why don't we ban all hangers?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we can just ban all hangers, you know, nobody's going to use anything else.
And furthermore, I say we block off all back alleys. You can't have back alleys, and you can't drive down them. You can't go to a back alley. Maybe we eliminate back alleys completely, and then the 3-day waiting period.
How about
on
we do this? We move, because eliminating all back alleys is ridiculous. I mean, how are you going to do that? You're going to block all these back alleys? Of course not. How about if you move the entrance to every building into the back alley, so the back alley becomes the front of the building?
Then what do you do with the front of the building?
Front of the building is just that. Well, that's just a street. That's not an alley.
Okay.
Okay. Right. So you're not going to have an abortion just out on the street. That's where people die because they have cancer.
So everybody must go around to the back alley and enter that way.
Yes.
And then nobody can use it as a back alley entrance.
Right. That way you're not having back alley abortions because the pedestrian traffic.
Too many people seeing it.
Too many people seeing it. So you move the entrance to the back alley, but you recognize that the front of the building is now in the back alley, but the old front of the building is out on an open street where, if you don't have health insurance, that's where you go to die.
Which is exactly what Republicans want you to do. They want you to die in the street.
Of course.
So
we all know that. So I think we've just solved another.
I think we did.
I think we've just solved for Kavanaugh.
And
just,
you're welcome.
You could vote for Kavanaugh and just move your entrance to the alley. And I think we're all set. That makes almost as much sense as the kind of stuff that they talk about.
It does. It makes more sense than the stuff they talk about.
And it actually kind of works in there a little because it makes the front of the building also a killing place. All right, let me tell you about Mercury Real Estate. For most Americans, your home is the biggest investment you're ever going to make. And this is why we have realestateagentsitrust.com, because you have to work with an agent that you trust, because working with the wrong agent makes a huge difference in the outcome of buying or selling. We have over 1,000 agents all over America who are just like you. Their word is their bond. They're fans of the show. They share your sensibilities. Our agents are vetted. They're handpicked for our team by looking at their knowledge, the skill, the track record that they have. Thousands of families have already put realestateagentsitrust.com to the test. And the results are really incredible. And you can find out yourself just by going to the website, realestateagentsitrust.com. Helping you and helping families all across America get the biggest bang for their buck, whether you are buying or selling your home. realestateagentsitrust.com. That's realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. Today is the day for answering questions. Anything that's on your mind is at 5 o'clock today, and that will be on the Blaze TV at 5 o'clock. I'm just about ready to go to Facebook Live. In fact, we're broadcasting now on Facebook Live and taking your questions on cryptocurrency as well. And you can just send us any of your questions right now, Facebook Live, and I'll go there right after the radio show.
You're going to give me the three names of the cryptocurrencies that Tika Tiwari recommends I buy right now?
I don't have them.
Okay, this is the third time this week I've asked you that, and
I don't believe
you don't have them.
I don't have them.
You're just saving it for next Thursday.
I don't have them, but if I did, I probably wouldn't tell you.
You probably wouldn't.
No, and you can sign up for the free cryptocurrency.
Where would I do that? Where would I register for such a thing?
I don't know. What is the name of it? Is it, what is it?
It's
Beck Crypto Show.
BeckCryptoShow.com.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. BeckCryptoShow.com.
Mm-hmm.
And that's free next week. You don't want to miss that.
But you do have to register, so go there and do that right now.
By the way, have you heard about the that Egypt found a black granite sarcophagus? It's in a tomb that dates back to about 323 BC. It's the largest discovery of its kind in that area. Nobody knows what is in it. They don't know who it is. It's just this big black sarcophagus. Now, the debate is, should Egypt open it?
Why are they? Of course.
Right?
Yeah. Obviously, you're going to open it.
Right. You can't have a big black box that you find in the middle of nowhere and go, all right, whatever you do, don't open that. That's you to know.
From 2,300 years ago?
You have to open it.
Absolutely.
I would want Tom Cruise and The Rock and Brendan Fraser there where I open it. And I don't want to be anywhere near it.
Right.
And I'm not going to be on the cargo plane that is transporting it. I'm just telling you that. But
because that could be dangerous. We saw what happened in the documentary.
The Mummy.
The Mummy. There was another one.
The Mummy.
Indiana Jones.
Oh, Indiana Jones.
When they opened up that box, all heck broke loose.
Yeah.
And people died.
Yeah. So don't look in it. You can open it, but just don't look in it.
No, right.
So that'll be interesting.
But there's no question there. I would absolutely
open it.
Absolutely.
People are saying, I don't want to open it because rich people will just get the money from it.
Oh, brother.
Shut up. Shut up. When they opened King Tut's tomb, it all went to the rich people. No, it didn't. It went to Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the museum in Cairo. It went to Egypt. Yeah, but rich people own the museum.
And it helped. The song helped Steve Martin get rich.
Wow. So. I that may have been the curse.
Yeah.
May have been the curse of the mummy, but I'm not sure. Okay. Join me tonight, 5 o'clock, only on the Blaze TV. And up next is the Pat Gray Radio Roundup. How were the Singing Cowboys yesterday?
They were pretty good.
They were good. They were good. Yeah,
pretty good.
So, you know, today is just a grab bag. You just don't know what you're going to get with the Pat Gray Radio Roundup on the Blaze Radio Network, which is coming up next.
Steer wrestling today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Glenn Beck. Mercury.